Today, we're going to discuss a recent Journal of Applied Physiology paper entitled Decreases in Maximal Oxygen Uptake Following Long-Duration Spaceflight, the Role of Convective and Diffusive O2 Transport Mechanisms by Audie, Broxterman, Moore, and Bastow. Representing the authors will be Carl Audie. As our commenting expert today, we have Dr. Connie Shaw from UT Southwestern in Dallas. Carl, give us a brief summary of the paper indicating what was the question, how did you go about answering it, and what did you find?
Early work by several investigators looking at short-duration microgravity exposure suggested that VO2 max was significantly decreased owing to a primary decrease in cardiac output. But more recently, several investigators have suggested that both central and peripheral limitations to O2 transport determine this decrease in maximal aerobic capacity. These early studies, though, involved bed rest and not space flight and were less than 90 days in duration. And missions aboard the International Space Station can last up to a year and have confounding variables associated with life in space. Therefore, we aim to evaluate the effects of long-duration space flight on these two components of oxygen transport. To investigate this, we were able to obtain VO2 max, hemoglobin, concentration, and maximal cardiac output retrospectively in a group of 9 astronauts prior to and following an International Space Station mission of approximately 169 days. VO2 max significantly decreased pre to post flight, and that there was a significant decrease in cardiac output that ultimately resulted in a significant decrease in convective or perfusive O2 transport. Our estimate of O2 diffusing capacity was also significantly decreased from pre to post flight by nearly 30%. And using linear regression, we suggest that VO2 max was significantly correlated with these changes in O2 diffusing capacity. These data therefore suggest that spaceflight decreases both convective and diffusive O2 transport, and that they contribute to the decrease in post-flight aerobic exercise capacity.
Connie, what's your take on this paper?
The finding of the modestly reduced VO2 max and convective oxygen delivery has previously been reported, and the absolute magnitude of reduction is rather modest. I think it was about 7 to 10%. On the other hand, this is the first report showing a rather large reduction in the estimated diffusing capacity by about 27%. Which is a bigger contributor to the reduction in VO2 max than the convective deficit. So the major novel findings is this peripheral vascular or muscle capacity, and this diffusive reduction can have significant physiological implications for the health and performance of the astronauts undergoing very long duration space flight. The uniqueness of the subjects and the unique setting also pose inherent limitations. The retrospective nature of the data collection, the submaximal exercise testing used to extrapolate to maximal exercise, and assumptions in the estimation of diffusing capacity. But overall, I think this is a very informative study, and it opens up a number of questions and important directions for future investigation.
Let's be very clear here that we are talking about diffusing capacity for oxygen in the muscle, not in the lung. Carl, could you comment on the sensitivity of your outcomes to the various assumptions that you were forced to make?
We had to make several assumptions due to the unique nature of the study. One of those was looking at arterial O2 saturation. We had to draw on previous bed rest and spaceflight studies, and the evidence suggested that arterial saturation is relatively unchanged with microgravity exposure, staying up around 96-97%. We needed to do a sensitivity analysis. Similar types of assumptions had to be made looking at blood temperature and blood pH changes at max exercise. Since we couldn't get femoral artery venous blood draws in these individuals, we had to make some assumptions about those. While this changed the absolute values of our muscle O2 diffusing capacity estimate, it didn't change the overall directional change. We still see significant reductions in O2 diffusing capacity within the skeletal muscle.
It naturally leads into a discussion of the interpretation of the Fick principle. the equation that says oxygen uptake is the product of blood flow and arteriovenous oxygen concentration difference. Explain that a little more, Carl.
There's this interdependence between muscle perfusive O2 delivery and the diffusive relationship that interact to determine O2 extraction. In the general Fick principle, where you've got VO2 equals cardiac output times the AVO2 difference, any change in cardiac output that doesn't see a change in AVO2 difference could be misinterpreted as being solely due to changes in cardiac function. But because of this interdependence between perfusive and diffusive relationships, O2 extraction is dependent on the ratio of VO2 to O2 delivery, such that DO2 could be compromised and O2 extraction remain normal.
That's a very important message. Do you have any idea as to the structural underpinnings of this loss of diffusive capacity in the skeletal muscle?
If we look at what's known from bed rest and some unloading studies and space flight, it suggests that the capillary to fiber ratio and capillary density is relatively unchanged with microgravity. Given that we see skeletal muscle atrophy in flight, this suggests that we're seeing parallel changes in capillary density and the muscle fiber size. The O2 diffusing capacity is determined by the actual surface area between the red blood cell and the capillary membrane. We know from some studies in animal models that capillary hematocrit is a main driver for this O2 diffusing capacity. So from a structural standpoint, there may be minor things taking place in regards to the capillary fiber ratio, but this capillary hematocrit may be decreased in these post-flight astronauts, thus reducing the red blood cell surface area and the ability to diffuse oxygen.
A very important concept is that convective and diffusive oxygen transport, they are inherently interdependent. When there is a reduction in convective oxygen delivery, that would necessarily reduce capillary recruitment. It may induce heterogeneous distribution of local blood flow so that the total surface area for diffusion is reduced, but at the same time that the matching of red blood cell membrane surface to tissue membrane surface is compromised. So we have a situation of diffusion-perfusion mismatch, and it's this mismatch that I think underlies a lot of the confusion about whether decline in total oxygen transport is due to convection or due to diffusion. A lot of the times it's due to both because of this interdependence.
Connie, what do you think might be the mechanisms that underlie these convective and diffusive changes?
The exposure to microgravity has ramifications for every part of the physiologic system, all the way from fluid shift that changes plasma volume and distribution between central and peripheral blood volume, to cardiac effects, which may be preload or contractility related, and that affects ventricular filling volume and stroke volume, which we know to be reduced in microgravity at any given level of exercise. And also with prolonged exposure to microgravity, there may be changes in cardiac muscle mass. And different groups of muscle are active in microgravity compared to normal gravity. So there is also a shift in the distribution of blood flow, as well as perhaps autonomic or vasoconstrictor control of different muscle groups that require more time to readapt to normal gravity after flight than the 2 days interval that has elapsed in this particular study. There may also be changes in intrinsic muscle cell structure like mitochondrial density or where they are located. It's been shown in hypoxia studies that the mitochondria can move closer to the capillary bed, so that also shortens the diffusion distance.
That's a lot of research to be done. Carl, were countermeasures as simple as regular exercise performed during these long-duration space flights? If so, were they at a sufficient duration and intensity to have a beneficial effect? Whatever countermeasures were used, they were insufficient to prevent a 30% loss of diffusing capacity.
The astronauts in this study were part of just the earlier standard self kind of prescribed or individual prescribed exercise training that's done on the International Space Station. They had access to various machines, cycle ergometer, treadmill, the ARAD, which is more for resistance exercise, and more traditional types of exercise training were done in this particular group of individuals. Recent work that may still be in final stages and hopefully soon out for publication is looking at more high-intensity interval training in astronauts during the International Space Station. And they are seeing more preserved maximal oxygen uptake in these astronauts. It seems to be mitigating some of these losses. The big question will be, what is the intensity and duration that will mitigate these responses, but also allow the astronauts to not constantly be performing these countermeasures, given that they've got other experiments and tasks to take care of? That then gets even further more important when you start thinking about different space capsules and the type of exercise that may be available for those more longer duration, deeper space type missions.
What about the ability of humans to go to Mars and back? If you see a 30% decline in the oxygen diffusional pathway with 160 to 170 days of space flight, what are you going to see over 2 to 3 years?
Unfortunately, we don't have enough evidence to really answer. The data suggests that around 80 to 90 days, we may start seeing a leveling off of a VO2 max. That would suggest that maybe what we're seeing here in this International Space Station may be the lower end of what we could expect.
So you don't think that VO2 max is likely to continue to degrade over longer-term spaceflight?
I don't believe so. That's based off cross-sectional data. We've got a lot of information in the first 30 to 40 days of spaceflight and very little beyond that. The twin study that just completed, they were up there for a full year, the longest International Space Station mission, and it'll be very interesting to see how maximal aerobic capacity changed in those astronauts relative to what we report here in this 168-day study.
The adaptation that we see over a long time in space, one would think would be towards better performance in microgravity. It's kind of a speculative question whether or not deconditioning-like changes will actually have a significant effect for the astronauts' performance on Mars, since Mars is a low-gravity environment.
These extravehicular activities on the International Space Station when you're in near zero G require a metabolic cost of 0.8 to 1 liter per minute. So they're not very high intensity. Some studies that have been done at the Johnson Space Center have looked at individuals in Mars gravity in a mock-up of a planetary spacesuit. And that data suggests that walking on Mars at about 3 miles per hour will elicit a metabolic cost somewhere around 30 mils per kg per minute. So when you consider that you're going to send an astronaut who may see substantial reductions in VO2 max on Mars, there may be the metabolic challenge during these EVAs that despite them being in microgravity, it's the microgravity and the restrictions of the suit that really may play a big role, and that's where we'll see the in-flight consequences of this decrease in VO2 max.
Connie, any other questions?
One more, which has to do with the reported decrease in VO2 max is about 15%. The convective portion is about 7%, and the diffusive portion is about 27%. So I would think that the diffusive deficit plus the convective deficit would be what you get in VO2 max, but that's not the case.
What you were quoting were changes in the conductance parameters themselves, cardiac output and diffusing capacity. That is not numerically the same as the changes either of those two parameters would cause in VO2 max. A drop in cardiac output will certainly reduce convective delivery, but it will allow for greater oxygen extraction, offsetting that to some extent. Therefore, for a 7% drop in cardiac output, you will see a less than 7% drop in VO2 max. Let me conclude by thanking both Carl Oddie and Connie Shaw for their expert discussion of this very intriguing problem of what happens to normal folk in microgravity for extended periods of time.